Life in the city has its share of strange and dangerous things. But at least in more populous areas, there is the expectation of the unusual, and a tolerance of the unorthodox. And acts of aggression or sedition are met with swift resolve in the strange find good company. But the city is not the province of the truly bizarre. The weirdest things brew where people have room to roam, under the cover of solitude, into the nooks and crannies that are tucked down too deeply into the landscape, into areas too secluded for the light of day to shine, or the influence of social norm to affect, or the long arm of the law to reach. This is a place where the expectation of consequence and the fear of retribution are unknown. This is where the schemers hide, the occultists practice, and the psychotic take refuge. This is where the overly curious do weird things, and the eccentric know no bounds. This is where the drifters wind up, where the addicts squat in abandoned land, or in silos, or even underground in hidden bunkers. This is where things that are oftentimes too bizarre or repulsive to believe can and do take place. Prepare your mind and join me in a journey into those hidden away places I like to call the Devil's Playground. A Man Named Forsyth, Part 5. My doorbell rang. I looked at the clock. 4:45 a.m. Either somebody died or I just won the publisher's clearinghouse. I went to the window and looked out into the driveway. I saw a black Lincoln Continental sedan. It was an older model, but it looked in mint condition. The doorbell rang again. I threw on some sweatpants and an old t-shirt and made my way to the front door. I opened it. Two men in black suits with nondescript faces wearing fedora hats just stood there.
James Forsythe.
One of them said with a blinkless, beady-eyed stare without looking away. That's me. What can I do for you gentlemen?
I'm Investigator Timmons, and this is Investigator Barker.
I paused and took a step back.
We want to talk with you about an incident that occurred in the area a couple of nights ago,
Barker said. They had an unusual cadence to their speech. It was monotonous, and although low-pitched, it almost seemed genderless. And they sounded similar, although the beady-eyed Timmons had a slightly lower register. I stared back at Beady Eyes for a beat. Oh, crap. I thought you guys were going to offer me a prize. I even combed my hair and brushed my teeth. I wiped the sleep from my eyes and yawned.
May we come in?
Double crap. Where are my manners? Of course. Come right in.
I was reluctant, but I saw no other option. That I'd actually been in their position on more than one occasion. I saw them into the living room and offered them a seat. You guys are up early. Trying to get a jump on traffic?
Yes.
I was just getting some coffee. Would you like some? I lied. I was barely awake. And my unconventional work schedule would have allowed me to sleep for another 3 to 4 hours.
No, thank you.
No, thank you.
They both said in unison. I stared at them just sitting there. God damn, they were a sight. Two bald, beady-eyed men in suits sitting like two old women on the edge of their seats with their legs pressed together. When I say bald, I mean like paraquat victim or radiation exposure bald. No eyebrows, no eyelashes. Nice and creepy way to start the day, I thought. I disappeared into the kitchen to make some coffee and to buy myself some time to figure out what these two wanted. Because I had done field investigations in the past in my line of work, I knew that they were relatively certain that I had something that they wanted, either information or otherwise. And I knew it had to do with the sighting. I'm no stranger to UFO folklore. And within seconds, there was something in the back of my head shouting at me, "Men in Black!" But that was a myth, wasn't it? And this was reality. I wanted to see how far the two would take this ruse. After the coffee maker started gurgling with the last few droplets of liquid, I poured myself a cup and walked back into the living room. The two were sitting there, calmly staring at me. "Okay, gentlemen, now what can I do for you?"
"You saw something 2 days ago.
A ship nearby.
You had an encounter with the occupants.
They gave you something."
"Now that might be the case, but how might you know that?"
"We haven't reached you in time. They gave you something."
"Maybe you didn't hear me. I said, how might you two know whether or not I had an unusual encounter a couple of days ago?" I wanted to milk this out. I wasn't scared.
"Mr. Forsyth, we know the facts.
We are not posing these phrases to you as questions. We were making you aware that we know what happened.
You spoke with Mr. Wilson."
I nodded. "Yeah, I did."
"He offered you a sum of money for the yellow book."
"He did."
"We're here to offer you a greater sum of money for the yellow book and all recorded media of your encounter."
"How much are we talking?"
"We'll double the offer. But you are to flatly refuse any contact with Wilson on the matter. You are never to speak with him nor anyone else about this encounter."
"That's a compelling offer." I paused. "But seeing as how I somehow initiated a bidding war on this yellow book thing, I think I need to ask a few questions to satisfy my own curiosity before I consent to anything. Would you mind?"
"We will do our best within the confines of our restraints."
"Where are these creatures from?"
"They are from a solar system approximately 40 light years away."
"How did they get here so quickly? It would be impossible for us to even imagine going that far in a reasonable amount of time."
"They have a technology that allows them to fold space-time. It is a discovery that mankind on this planet has not yet made. But it is one that you will make within the next century, on your own. Having access to the Yellow Book would allow mankind on Earth to develop this technology here within just 5 years.
"So you know about Wilson. Who is he? And why does he want the Yellow Book?"
"Wilson is a scout for a large independent aerospace developer and manufacturer. They want the technology contained within the Yellow Book to give them a competitive advantage in space exploration."
"Aside from a bigger payout, why should I cooperate with you guys?"
"We cannot, of course, force you to comply with our wishes. But we can make your life difficult if you do not."
"How so?"
"We have found that persistent mental torture is our best weapon. We will follow you to the ends of the earth and make our presence known to you if you defy our wishes."
"Then why not just demand the Yellow Book right now? Why are you bartering with me?"
"Because we know that if we gain your trust and if you accept our offer, you will keep your end of the bargain. If you refuse, all bets are off."
"Okay, one more question. Wilson wants this Yellow Book, but he also wants me. Because without me, he cannot access the information he wants in the Yellow Book. So what good is it to you without me?"
"Mr. Forsyth, we have no use for the technology. Our purpose here is to enforce guidelines and to establish boundaries. So while we do not wish to access their technology for any particular or personal competitive gain, we seek to contain the Yellow Book and quarantine it from use by Earth interests.
Your cops!
That would be a crude overgeneralization, but yes, you could refer to us as such.
Heh. So am I. Or I was.
I paused to study their faces.
You're not going to give me any time to think about my decision now, are you?
Visit us directly online at thedevilsplaygroundshow.com. Subscribe to the Devil's Playground podcast to stay tuned at anchor.fm/thedevilsplayground. And visit our merchandise store at tinyurl.com/thedevilsplaygroundstore. You've been listening to The Devil's Playground.